I love doing interviews at the Fringe in noisy Scottish pubs, particularly after seeing good plays. And I'm privileged to be with the writer and the director in this case, although I'm a bit scared based on the play that I've just seen, which is called What Do You Mean? And it's with Bruce A. Kramer, who's the writer, and Joan Kane, the director. Bruce, are you the writer that we see on stage?
The writer that we see on stage is one, is partly me, but the other characters are also parts of me. Not all of them. I am the director is somebody else, and the actor is somebody else. I am neither an actor nor a director, but the intern and the playwright and the producer certainly are pieces of me.
And are you the director, Joan?
Part of me is, yes, the bossy part. I'm the director of the whole play, but in terms of the character of the playwright and the designer, it's based on our relationship because we've been working together for 30 years. Bruce is a lighting designer, I'm a theater director, and we do have conversations like that at 3 o'clock in the morning. I want to direct an environmental piece and things like that that are in the play.
I occasionally refer to our marriage as a 724 365 production meeting, because any time of day we're talking about productions that we're either working on or going to be working on or worked on a couple of years ago, back and forth all day every day.
So after a play and after going home from a noisy Scottish pub, what do the writer and the director talk about in bed?
How to fix this play, what we're doing about our next production, and what we're doing about the production after that.
I talk a lot about, so what did you think about this particular section? Did it work? Did it not work? How could we speed it up? How can we tighten it up? Were the lines said the way you meant them to be said? So we discuss a lot of what his intention is and what my intention is as the director. And also we talk to the actors because we're living with them.
You know, in that double bed, I'm assuming here, do you then take that costume off and then just become husband and wife again?
That is being husband and wife for us.
Well, that's a very definitive statement there. So no little small talk.
That is small talk.
Well, we also have other parts of our life that we handle. We have two sons that we talk about who are grown and out of the house. We talk about different parts of our lives, like what we're doing tomorrow, what shows we're going to be seeing, the business that we have to take care of at the Fringe. It's not just the bossy director and fledgling writer. I mean, there's a lot more depth to our relationship.
I mean, but that's part of what I took away from this play, which is a play about the creative process and the constraints and all kinds of other interesting things. But, you know, there's a place where being so immersed can become kind of toxic.
Well, I'm kind of hoping that the people that are coming to the Fringe to present plays, the performers, the directors, the technicians, they're the kind of people who are immersed in this world, and this play is for them. So I'm kind of hoping that they're going to want to see it, because I think that they'll get all the in-jokes, the business jokes. I found that there's almost a two levels of reactions. Some of the theater jokes hit, and the theater people who know the business laugh at them, and then a minute later when we explain the joke, the civilians laugh at the joke.
And also, you know, that one could think that these are caricatures and types, but actually, having been to the Fringe for over 10 years myself, you know, this is a place where caricature and real person almost meet, don't they? They're not that far from the real people you'll meet.
Indeed, and I would like to point out that when I wrote this play, I was... the play is set in a festival, but it's not just necessarily the Fringe Festival. We've done a lot of work in festivals in New York, so it's kind of a commentary on all festivals everywhere. You know, every single one of them, you have a very limited amount of time to put the show in, a very limited amount of time to get it out. There's very limited design constraints. The stages maybe if you played it one place and you move to another place, it's a whole different shape you have to adapt to. So Fringe is just one festival among the many festivals that I'm sort of spoofing in this play.
But also in some of the kind of comedies from the 1930s, 40s that were about Broadway and about musicals and that, there was always that, you know, cigar-smoking, producer. And your producer of a festival is very similar to that. And I meet them up here all the time.
Well, I hate to admit it, but except for the cigar, I'm sort of one of them. And our actor, Dolan Burns, who's playing that part, is doing a terrific job of being the you know wise old owl and the knowledgeable one, and sort of explaining what needs to go on from the producer's point of view. Yeah, every single show has to have a producer, and ours is a perfect example of a lot of people you run into.
Can you let us follow you around for you know a few months from the moment you thought up this idea to the moment you said you know here's the script let's get rehearsing. What where are we going with you and what are you doing to write this play?
Well, the original impetus was actually a lot of fledgling playwrights that we've worked with back in New York that I found very frustrating because I found them to be very intelligent, literate people who really wanted to be known as a playwright and knew nothing about the theater. And they would write dialogue and write scenes and hand them over to us and say, produce my play, please. And we would try to make sense of them, and many of them were filmic in many, many locations and impossible scene changes. And we would start working with them and help with the dramaturgy and help form the plays to bring them into a reality that you could actually produce on a stage. And my impetus for this was kind of a protest against those playwrights, sort of to teach them how you do this stuff and how important all these important processes in the theater are that they don't think about even a little.
But are you sitting in some cafe down in you know in the West Village with notebooks? How is there a laptop? Is this done at home? How does the writer create? How does Bruce create?
Actually, it's described in my play, the designer's process is that he sits at his laptop and stares at the ceiling.
So that was you?
Yeah, actually that is me, and that is my process. But what I found that what I would do is I'd think of a situation or a scene that I wanted to write, and I'd start typing, and my fingers took over, and I just watched what they type and laughed and laughed and laughed. And when I was typing a part that I didn't laugh at, I deleted it.
And Joan, when that bit of writing's been written, I mean, you have a dual role then, don't you? Because the director's going to have a take on that, but doesn't the wife have an equally important take?
Well, part of what I do is I will come up with projects. I know a lot of playwrights, and they'll always come to me with their plays. And I will go to him with them and say, this is a really wonderful play. It needs some work. Let's work on it together. So the whole aspect of Jesse, the character of Jesse saying, we'll make it work, that's me. That's what I do. I make the play work. And through the rehearsal process, we develop the play. This is not the first version of the play. We actually performed the play last year in the Planet Connections Festival in New York City. And we got a lot of feedback. We worked with a wonderful playwright, dramaturg by the name of Mario Fratti. And he's a dear friend of ours and gave us some ideas about it. And then we had a series of readings. And I was always the person who was saying, this could be even more heightened. This character needs more of an arc to their development, or this relationship needs to be developed more for the audience to understand it. Because I feel as a director, I'm the first person who's seeing it. I'm the audience advocate. I'm the person who's saying, is the audience going to understand this story that's being told? So I have these conversations with him all the time, and sometimes he doesn't agree with me. Sometimes we get into a huge argument. And we'll be sitting in the middle of our living room or in the middle of the grocery store doing some shopping together. And I'll come up with an idea. No, that's not the way my character is written. And I would say to him, but we have to put something in there for the audience to understand this part of it. So we have this dialogue that's constantly going on.
This husband writer was just looking at this wife director with a lot of love then.
Well, for example, when she would give me notes about the play, some of them were, you know, I would see that if I looked at the bigger picture of the play, I needed to make the story arc of a given character or a given relationship between characters progress from beginning to end. And I thought those were completely valid criticisms. Other things she suggested, like there was a comment about continuity, and I decided rather than to insert continuity, to just insert a comment about continuity. Because this play doesn't need to have continuity.
And they're all very talented actors there, I can tell. So how much freedom were they allowed in the rehearsal room to contribute? Was there any devising, or were they just given a script and directed?
They were given a script, a finished script. And then what we did, we did a lot of improvisation around the bits. We called it the bits in the script. And then Bruce would sit in on the rehearsal and say, okay, I need to rewrite this part. We also had a lot of input from each and every one of the actors about their characters. And for instance, Jesse, who plays Dev Brand, who plays Jesse, would say, but my character wouldn't say this, Joan, because it doesn't make sense. Or Johan had a whole development with his character about this character being germophobic. And that came out of the rehearsal process. So I said, let's keep that. So a lot of the bits that you see on stage, a lot of the behavior is from the actors trying different aspects of their characters out. I'm very much a director who, let's get up and try it. Here are our parameters. Here's our structure. But let's play within that structure. And I don't say no to anything in the rehearsal. And then we fine-tune it. And we see if it works or if it doesn't work. And that's basically the way we form the play.
I think you also identified something for me. I mean, there is a kind of polemic through this about writers needing to know theatre. And certainly something I've experienced in the UK is what I call the displacement of people into the arts from what I call the not job. You know, I don't want to work in an office, and this is the cool place to be, and it's happened in film as well. And so you're kind of saying that the inevitable result of that is going to be a play that no one comes to.
Well, it's not so much a play that no one comes to, because we've produced plenty of plays by fledgling playwrights who we had to fix their play, and once we fixed it, people came to it. We had sellouts in some cases. So that can happen. But it was frustrating that we have to do so much groundwork. Many's the play that we've had handed to us that we had to write the ending scene for, because there was no ending. That's been a little bit frustrating, and that's partly what I was protesting when in writing this play.
So, I mean, people can have ideas, and they can make meaning of the world, but they won't necessarily have the theatrical form that, you know, the dramaturg brings even to good writers.
I've found that a lot of people can write dialogue. Not so many people can write story. And when you say something to a fledgling writer like, the character arc of this individual character has to progress from this point, from early in the play to late in the play, and we need to see them learn something and develop, and they look at you as if you're speaking a foreign language.
And, you know, I don't want to give away anything to the audience, but there is this kind of good circle closing at the end of this play. You know, it kind of disappears artistically, doesn't it, up its own, but for very good reasons. In a way, have you arrived as a writer? I mean, the two people before me are not 21, but they're not ready for retirement by any means. But are you more fatalistic or more optimistic about the state of theatre?
Well, I'm always optimistic. I mean, even with people getting into the industry who aren't very experienced, as far as I'm concerned, the more there is, the more there is. The more plays that people do, the more of them I get to work on, one way or the other. Or if there's more plays, there's more demand for theaters, and there's more theaters I can work in, or more rehearsal spaces, or more audience. So I'm a happy guy when people are coming into the business, absolutely.
And as a director, I mean, you know, certainly up here again, I've heard some directors say, it's harder to find work that isn't accidentally derivative. You know, everything's beginning to recycle itself. Those really original scripts that a director, you know, would die for. Are they there on the New York writer scene?
Some are, but a lot of them aren't. And I find myself reading 10 to 15 scripts a week and just sitting there going, I don't want to work on this. It doesn't spark anything in me. But there are some playwrights out there, especially in New York, who are really brilliant. And I hope I get to work with them. I have a lot of hope for the theater. What I don't have hope for is that we have a lot of MFA programs that are churning people out and saying, here, get your MFA, get your union card, and all of a sudden you're a professional actor or a professional director, a professional designer. And it takes years to do that, to become a professional creative artist. It just doesn't happen overnight. And I think there's a falsity that's happening with a lot of these MFA programs. Oh, I got my degree. Now I've arrived. And it takes more than that. It takes pounding the pavement and doing the work and getting the experience. There doesn't seem to be, I know, in the New York scene, this apprentice system. People just, there is a system of the indie theater system, so people produce themselves a lot. So that's how they're getting a lot of experience. And the festival circuit is a place where a lot of people are being able to get that experience to produce. But there seems to be this whole thing, I can buy my way into theater. And you can't. You have to earn your way in by experiencing, by working, and working with people who are better than yourself. And I'm working with a group of actors right now, and one of them, Johan, who is, I think he's better than me as a director. He's an amazing actor and has forced me as a director to go to places that I've never gone before. And Nick Palladina has done that. So there's a sense of who are your collaborators? Who are the people that you're working with? And how can you create and grow together?
Bruce, what's in your secret notebooks?
Well, I have a sequel that I'm cooking up that every time I mention it, the cast and the director of this show sort of cringe. I've got a couple of other ideas for things that are kicking around. It's just that since apparently I'm a playwright, which I find kind of astonishing. I don't really think of myself as a playwright. But I am an active, working, busy designer. I'm an active, working, busy technician. I do stage management, a technical direction. I do a lot of things. So finding the time to hit those notebooks is tough.
Final question to you both then. Just for people that are kind of coming up to this particular Fringe and this festival, why this monster?
I was here last year, and I found it the most exhilarating experience of my life in terms of the Fringe Festival, any Fringes that I've worked on. The people here are so generous and so knowledgeable. The conversations I have with the folks, just walking down the street and talking with other artists, is amazing. I don't have those kind of conversations very often. The knowledge of the people in this festival is outrageously wonderful, and it feeds me. I go back to New York City after I've seen all the shows here, and I'm inspired. So that's why I love coming to the Edinburgh Fringe.
Final word as ever with the writer.
The city is beautiful. I'm just amazed every time we walk around here. We were here last year, and this year we're staying and working in a completely different neighborhood, and it's just more wonderful than it was last year. And like Joni said, it's amazing to walk around the city and just talk to people, either ones who are involved in the Fringe or ones who aren't, and it's just a tremendous amount of fun. We really enjoy Scotland and people who live here. And then the people who work in the venues, I found, are amazingly supportive and professional, and that is definitely, you asked about this specific festival. They're better here than they are in festivals in New York. There's no question about it. Like, a lot better.
They're more experienced in terms of getting a lot of shows in and out, and they support you. What do you need? How can we help you with it? This is your time period. So they're very clear and specific with you on what their venue is about and what they need to make your show happen. They're real professionals. It's exciting to be working with them. I love working in spotlights.
Joan Kane, Bruce A. Kramer, thank you very much indeed.